This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The content shared is not a substitute for professional medical, mental health, legal, or financial advice. Please consult a qualified professional for personalized guidance or treatment. By listening, you acknowledge that the hosts and guests are not responsible for any decisions or actions you take based on this content.
Feel like a grouch, go beyond the couch, share your confessions on the Aurora Sessions.
Hello, Aurora Healing Crew. Welcome to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch, where we take the stressors that come up in session and bring them into conversation beyond the couch. This is the space where real talk meets real life.
Hi, everyone. This is Teresa here, the founder of Aurora Sun Counseling, a group private practice providing psychotherapy for clients in New Jersey, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. Today, we have a special guest. Her name is Rose. Hi, Rose.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us today. Rose is, I'm just going to introduce her first and then throw it to her if she wants to add anything. Rose Fedeco, LAC. Did I say that right?
Fedeco, but it's okay.
I don't know if you've listened to my other episode, but I've needed correcting. So Fedeco. So everything is sounded out like it's spelled. So Fedeco. LAC. So she came to Aurora recently. When did you start?
September.
Oh my gosh, that's super. Oh, that's right. September. A whirlwind. Yes. And we were so excited. She was a friend reached out and asked if I was hiring, and I was like, not really, but I'm willing to talk to whoever it is that you want. Who you think would be a good fit for Aurora. And now we have Rose. And so Rose is a licensed associate counselor in the state of New Jersey. Very close to her LPC. She's almost done. When are you going to be done?
Should be this month or next month.
Yay! Mm-hmm. So soon to be LPC. And she has her master's in clinical mental health counseling from Wilmington University and a bachelor's in psychology from the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. Interesting. So you went back there on your vacation recently.
Yes, yes. That's, we go every year.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. so cool. So I found that little fact, I've heard of the Citadel, but I never known anybody to actually go. So that was really interesting to me when I saw your resume. And she also, this is not her first career. She holds a license for occupational therapy assistant, specializing in sensory integration across the lifespan. She's also a U.S. Army veteran, a former captain who served in Operation Iraq Freedom. And she brings a deep understanding of trauma, resilience, and the importance of individualized care. So she's also ADHD certified, ADHD certified clinical service provider, which means that she can do assessments to diagnose clients who need the diagnosis, whether it's for school or work, with ADHD. And she also has specialized training in attention, executive functioning, and neurodivergent care. All things that are so important, especially as we learn more about neurodivergent brain and ADHD. And also along with that, she helps children, teens, and adults navigate anxiety, depression, personality disorders, and sensory processing. And she's also been She's also been over the last 6 years supporting elementary and secondary school students in their sensory system, and also worked in skilled nursing and rehabilitating settings to promote functional and emotional well-being. Pretty much, Rose has done anything in healthcare Soon you'll be doing like neural surgery, brain surgery. But okay. And I just want to add, she also does couples counseling because not a lot of people do couples. And she also does these things and couples counseling, which is great. So with that being said, Rose, with all of that, the reason why I wanted you to come on this podcast is tomorrow's Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. And we, as our one of the specialties that Aurora helps, one of the niches is first responders and veterans. We have a few people on staff, Courtney, who works with the veterans, and also Michelle has also worked with veteran grants as well. And with you not only working with them, but having been a vet, I wanted to ask you so many different questions about what things we should keep in mind when we're helping. What's the difference with clients who have been on the front lines, but so many different things. Also, thank you for your service.
I always
have such respect. Even though I volunteer, it's not something that I like look forward or excited to do, if I'm to be honest. So to give up like time in my life for years and live someplace else and to fight for your country is so honorable. So to keep us safe. So welcome and thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything you wanted to add to that introduction?
No, I think you covered that. And
okay. So I'll just start with the first question and see where it takes us. Okay. Can you share a little bit about your journey serving the United States Army to becoming a therapist? I know that's like a loaded question, but if you could share a little bit about the journey.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned before, I went to the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. And it all started there. I think when I was in high school, that's when 9/11 happened. And I just was kind of like curious about it all. I think I told you that before. You're like, what? Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't go that far for curiosity.
Correct.
But also I liked the structure, but it also kind of was like freeing because it was my choice. I wanted, you know, to travel and do the things. Yeah. And it's nice that they have education benefits, right, too, for serving. So I went to the Citadel and I did thrive there. I love it. Charleston, South Carolina. Anybody should go visit. It's a beautiful place.
My niece even at a there at the College of Charleston.
Yes. Everything's beautiful there. Even if you go to a military college that just wears all boring gray.
We have a wedding to go to for another niece next November. Actually, probably when you're going, we should carpool. And during that week, we're going. So that will be my first time to see it there, see Charleston. So that's great.
No, you'll love it and never want to leave. That's what I tell everybody. I'm like, never want to leave. So, I mean, I had a lot of great leadership and people that I met there. And I was like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's join the military. And there really wasn't any rhyme or reason other than I did come from a military family. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go in the Navy like my dad and my brother and my uncle. I was like, you know what? I'm going Army because we're better.
That's so funny.
And I was going to be the only officer and I was the only female in my family to go. So it just really taught me a lot about discipline at the Citadel. And then I was like, okay. But then I met my husband down there as well.
Oh, wow.
And I, at the time of like my right before graduating, I was like, oh, you know, I want to do occupational therapy. I met a good mentor at the Medical University of South Carolina down there. another amazing school.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what? I want to move up by my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, to New Jersey. And it was really funny. Like, everyone's like, why would you move from South Carolina to New Jersey?
Correct. Why would you? Why would anybody move to New Jersey?
I question myself. No. South Jersey is also very beautiful. Not the same as Charleston. And I was like, okay, let's do that. And then I had Army training. So I graduated May. Okay. I had Army training by June. And it was really funny because one of the people that I had training with was also going to be in my unit in New Jersey. And he was like, you know, we're getting deployed when we get home. I was like, wait, what? What? Like, I'm just here for, you know, because I was going to be a medical supply officer. I was like, but no, there's no way we're getting deployed. We just graduated. Like, I'm like 20 something years old.
Wouldn't they want someone more experienced?
No, that was my exact thought. Yeah. I was like, I'm just sitting over here living life. And then we went, so my training was at Fort Benning, and then I went to, San Antonio in Texas for my medical training. And my same friend from there also trained with me there. And he was like adamant. And I'm like, why? How are you so put together? Like, how? What is this? Like, okay. So sure enough, we finish in October and we get back home. Deployment orders come out and they're like, well, you're no longer medical service officers. You're going to be military police officers. And you're like, okay, shock number two. I was like, I never wanted to be that
officer.
But okay. You know, I never thought of myself as like being a police officer or like detaining someone or anything. So then we had to go back to training to train to for riots, for prisons, you know, you name it. And again, like I said, I was like one of the only female officers, even when I deployed. It was nice and bad at the same time, because any kind of female issue, whether that be detainees or that be female soldiers that were, you know, lower enlisted, whatever issue came up, it was like put on to me. And we were attached out, like we were problem children, most of the females. And we were attached to like a whole unit. We didn't really know. So there was a lot of issues in house. So I think that started my journey of being like, maybe we got something here about mental health and like what kind of goes with that. I mean, I was leaning more towards, like I said, the occupational therapy.
And, so what do you mean by that? So you were, when you became a military officer, what happened that you, they give you the female detainees and, And so what did you, what made you like start being curious about providing mental health care?
Well, it was, there was, it was just how things were put upon you, right?
Oh,
and then there was no
backing
it up. Like there, is, they have a lot of PowerPoints and debriefings. The military is very organized.
Like therapeutic support to help you with the process of being an officer and
taking care of hundreds of people and detainees.
So through your own experience, you were like, okay, is anybody gonna talk to me about what I just saw? Is anybody, I remember, like, totally not the same, but sometimes when you're by yourself, you're like, is anybody else here saying the same thing? Like, why? Where is anybody when I need someone to talk to? So, like, stuff like that.
No, precisely. Yeah. So, when I was deployed, I actually, it's a funny story now, but not so funny when it happened. So, I actually had electric shock. So, This is where I learned the difference between electric shock and electrocution. So apparently, electrocution means you die from it.
Yes.
I did not know. Right. Okay. So electric shock, I condemned a building while I was in Iraq. Okay. I went to go out of, we had like this little office space that was a building that was built, not by us. It was like a building that was already there. And I come out and it's electric lock on the door, and I put my hand on the wall. And then everything was like slow mo after that.
Oh my
and
gosh.
I couldn't release my handle, like my hand from the handle. And one of my sergeants, I'm laughing now, came over and like kicked me off the door right. with the boot. And, you know, my fingers were bleeding, and I was like, you know, like exhilarated. I was like, what? You know, this goes into, we'll say, shock therapy or something like that. It does work.
Restimulated some neurons. So, yeah.
I was like, all of us were shocked, needless to say, that that just happened. And I'm like, alive. And so then I go to, you know, the infirmary or whatever, the base medical people. And this man, not to be named, was like, you did not get electrocuted. And I was like, okay. And then I showed him, you know, my hands bleeding from where it, like, I guess, hooked on like a part. And he's like, that doesn't look like, you know, somebody who was electrocuted. And I'm like, okay, that's, I have several witnesses and whatever, and the whole building shut down. But cool. So then again, it was like getting I'm like, why are they not being supportive of what happened?
Right.
You know, even if it was like exaggerated,
right?
It's
right.
like it happened. Like, why are you so quick to dismiss
right.
someone else's story?
Yeah. Right.
Like, I was, you know, annoyed. And then I stayed. But you know what? The 2 weeks after that happened, I think I was the happiest I've ever been.
That is okay. Right now it's funny. But oh my gosh, that's so scary. So I guess like through your experiences and what would have helped you at the time with mental health support or just support and counseling
just support,
or yeah, peer support, group support, anything would have been helpful to, you know, help you do your job better.
Yes.
And I
better.
Think that's what us in the mental health field do talk about is, wouldn't you want, like, let's say police officers who put their lives on the line every day, see so much traumatic things to be well, right? To be well so they could do it more and want to return and want to feel safe. So, yeah.
To be able to unload your story without
exactly.
like repercussions
So, I mean, I could take this any way, these questions, but let's just stick to the script before I go rogue. Okay. So, okay. So what are some lessons from your military service that you carry into your work with your clients today?
That's a good one. I mean, I feel like everyone has a story to tell. Even when I, you know, was working with like local nationals, everyone, they get a bad rap, you know, especially when 9/11 happened. They're like, and to me, when I went overseas, I never experienced any kind of negativity from local nationals, Iraqis, like, you know, tried the local food and, you know, were very well taken care of. To me, I take that into each of my sessions and just remind myself that everyone has their own perception, their own story to tell. And if they're seeking help, then listen, you know, they're being brave enough to to say it. And that's already hard enough. That's like the first battle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. You know how we opened our first in person the office, and you know, we're talking about safety and everything. And I said over the weekend, it's not really the people who are coming in that I'm worried about as far as safety. It's the people who aren't getting help that we need to be more worried about. So, and I love that everybody has a story to tell, because and learning about all different perspectives, because that's so important as a therapist to, I remember seeing this video of this black therapist who he had a white therapist as a kid. And so his question was, can a white therapist help someone who's black? And he said, well, a white therapist, when I was a young man, helped me. And it was because she was able to see me as a whole person. And even though she didn't understand what I go through, what I've been through, she was willing to learn. So even when we don't have same views, because we do have to step outside of ourselves as a therapist, it's seeing the person as a whole person, where their point of view comes from. So,
and not personalizing it. You know, I feel like that's a whole other level too. You know, it's so easy to personalize.
Yeah. Wow. So, geez. Like, that is, like, seriously the epitome of, like, art imitating life, I feel. Like, you told, like, wearing a U.S. Army, right? You are the enemy in the national land where you're detaining people. And the people who you're detaining are supposed to be the enemy. But yet, you were able and see another point of view of where they're coming from, and that it's not just so like black and white and there's gray.
It isn't. Yeah, it never is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so tomorrow, and I'm hoping if I get all my ducks in a row, this will be broadcasted tomorrow, go live tomorrow, is Veterans Day. So that would be today, hopefully, when people hear this podcast. What does Veterans Day mean to you personally, now as a veteran, but also as a therapist?
Oh, you know, that's a hard thing, because you sometimes, and you'll ask most military members, they don't like to be recognized. Like, okay, get an award. Okay, pat yourself on the back, you know. But usually it's like one of, I mean, it's a nice day. You get some discounts on stuff, and that's nice, you know. But to me, it's always been one of those awkward type days. Like, I'm super proud of what I've done and what my fellow friends and soldiers have done in the military. But at the same time, it's like, when you were saying thank you at the beginning, it's like, how do you respond to that? Like, you have a whole day of recognition, and you're like, was that a big deal? Yes, of course it's a big deal, but like, you're kind of like in a back seat from it. Or I don't know how to explain the word, but it's strange to be on the other end and being like, thank you, you know, and then people giving thanks. But then you have the other end of it too, that people get mad as well, like for military members or service members, police officers, you know, you have like both ends
both
of it. And you're like,
yeah, you're right. I didn't really think about that, because I'm just thinking everybody's thankful for it. But yeah, no, you're right. Because especially, I guess, when I'm thinking about like the 70s, let's say, when there's like during the Vietnam War, where people weren't really understanding why their children were dying, right, in another country for a cause. And even soldiers coming back. Not understanding. So I could see that for sure. So personally, what do I do, because I do. I remember the kids when they were learning all about veterans during school, and you know, when you have zero control over what comes out of children's mouth as a you know, they would say, you know, which is I just thought was fine, but thank you for your service when they see someone in fatigues or someone or something in their uniform. So do we just say it? Do we not say it? Is everybody different? Will people get
No,
mad
I
at
think
me? I
saying
cannot
it's
deal with people getting mad. I'm
nice.
kidding.
No, but it's like, what is my response to it? Usually I say, oh, thank you. You know, and you're saying thank you for a thank you. I can't say you're welcome. That's like,
Why
I don't
not?
know, sounds weird. Like, it's kind of like arrogant. Like, you're welcome for your, I don't know.
No,
It
I
just
mean,
sounds.
that's a really good question. We will put that out there. People can comment, other military people. What are some things that you say in response to thank you for your service? But also, as a therapist, Rose, I'm also thinking it has to do with not feeling worthy of like the things. Like, I didn't do any, like, humility to the extreme. That like I didn't do it for the thanks or the recognition. I was just doing my job. Actually, I didn't really do that much at all. There's other people who like actually died, so but yeah. But I
All
think,
of that, yeah.
what would you say to a client who can't receive thanks for things?
Oh.
A little supervision here.
Take a compliment. No. Well, and that's what I've gotten a lot better than when I first came back from deployment about it. I was kind of very avoidant of all things military. But the more I've grown and the more I've, researched mental health is like what we were actually seeking, most of us, was like that connection, that support, and the validation that, hey, you put your life on the line for whatever reason the mission was, right? And because there's, various things. And then that should be something to be thanked for, or because not everybody chooses that, but it's definitely a conflicting thing, because when you come back and you are struggling, those with like PTSD or like extra anxiety, and when you're deployed, you're always on, right? You're like, there's no days off. Yes, there's downtime, but you're still in a combat zone. So when you come back home, you're like, do I take the things? That's extra attention. I'm still trying to process what happened. Various things happened. And then so you're like, not generalizing my whole population of military veterans, but it's confusing, and it does take some time to be like, okay,
To
I'll
readjust.
accept. Yes.
So much to think about. And so, transitioning to what therapists should know about working with veterans, what do you think is like the most important thing for a therapist to know? Just like, not everybody who should do trauma counseling unless you're trained, because it's like you don't want to re-traumatize or damage somebody or hurt someone. You really have to know what you're doing. So what do you think is different between, like, let's say childhood abuse or something versus combat? Like, what different interventions would you tell one day your supervisee to look for or to do?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I mean, well, because what? That's the difference between, maybe if they have the diagnosis of PTSD acute and chronic, right? So my own personal experience of therapists on my end as a veteran going, I had one. And sometimes you can do more harm. And it's like when, and that's why I think I stuck with the hearing people's stories mm-hmm. without trying to tell them what their story is. Mm. And I think a lot of times us as therapists want to solve a mm-hmm. problem mm-hmm. versus just being, mm-hmm. you know, with them. Because that is what a veteran, and even if you had child abuse, you want someone to hear your story and yeah. just be with it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, you can't fix it.
Right.
It's happened. Interventions, I mean, I think integrative approaches for military members or, like I said, veterans, I don't know. I feel for me it's, you know, it's not so simple as, because usually veterans and childhood trauma kind of go hand in hand,
yeah,
right? So you
right.
have to come, right. not, again, I'm generalizing them,
yeah.
see, doing that. But it's, you know, if you do a, I don't want to be cliche, like a person-centered approach or,
not cliche.
Or just ask them
yeah.
what they want to do. Because I have a lot of police officers mm-hmm. and, you know, veterans too, and also have the other end with the childhood trauma and stuff. And like sometimes with the veterans, it's like more straightforward. Like it takes a little while to unpeel mm-hmm. the onion mm-hmm. of emotions, right? Because
right.
you're so desensitized. So there could be some trauma focused
right.
work there. But then other times it's like that resistance to
yeah.
it, right? You don't, you're so used to not feeling and not, you don't know how to feel
right.
that emotion. And then when you do feel it, you may become angry at certain words, you know, or certain approaches, you know, may be different, or maybe they, the therapist themselves presents as right. someone who's invalidated that
right.
story, right?
I think that that's a good tip. Like, just even as therapists, like, mm-hmm. we're so quick to, not all of us, but like, I know I don't like silence. I don't,
right?
I don't do well with silence. So I try to like not fill in the blanks, but I mm-hmm. could do better at just listening and letting them tell their story without trying to mm-hmm. ask them to reframe something or, because sometimes reframing something can feel like gaslighting if we don't mm-hmm. if we're not careful. Like, was mm-hmm. it really that painful? Like, not that we would say that, but
so when I got back
yeah.
that's what
yeah.
I was saying, I had a therapist
yeah.
That said to me, I don't think you have PTSD, I think you just have anxiety. And to me, that struck me. I was like, how this, I, it was like our first session meeting, and I was just like, that's, I'm never coming back, number one. And I'm a hysterical walk
right.
out, you know, and I, and like, there was no cool down from all the emotions
oh,
that
geez.
Just
yeah.
came up. And then hearing that on top of it, it's like you said, it's like a little bit of gaslighting. Like, okay,
uh-huh.
maybe I'm not supposed to feel that way about, so it's just anxiety, you know, like how like some of us women, like you're feeling off.
Yeah.
It's just anxiety.
Oh, geez.
Like, calm down.
Because you have a uterus.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have to, as therapists, be very, like, obviously you want to be a real person
mm-hmm.
and you have real reactions, but like be very mindful of
mm-hmm.
the words we're using
yeah.
for people that have trauma, right?
So here's a good question. How can a therapist like yourself, who has had combat experience, balance empathy with boundaries when working with clients who have experienced combat and service-related trauma? I mean, it's
about
it's a good question, but very similar to anybody who's, let's say, been a victim of abuse, treating somebody with
mm-hmm.
a victim of abuse, right? The answer is similar. But what is your answer to that? So so like if something comes up, like with somebody who's been through combat, What is your rule of thumb with your sharing? And this is not a job interview about boundaries. I know we asked you that. You already have the job. So, like, as Rose a person, how do you balance that? Because are you all
Balance the
human?
boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've always, even in my grad program, I guess I struggle to being that, like, in the box, like not being myself, not knocking it, but it is hard to have boundaries when you can understand and relate to a story, but it's remembering first and foremost that that is their story, and that is where you put the boundary. Like, you can feel and you can be real and empathetic towards somebody like that, but that's where you draw the line, right? You do. You obviously, we wouldn't be therapists if we didn't want to help or, like, you know, they're here for us to have that professional knowledge and maybe relate. But at the end of the day, they don't really care if you relate or not. I
They
mean,
don't
sometimes we do, but.
Like maybe geography or certain missions or certain things like but also they're not trying to get a one-upper, right? We don't need a
No.
I think those are like therapists who don't have good supervision or maybe still need some healing, like when there's a one-upper therapist, because that's obviously not okay.
Yeah.
Or the difference of going to like a support group versus an A, like, sorry,
Yes.
I'm like AA, but or to a therapist. And that's
Yeah.
what's the difference between a master level therapist who has training in PTSD, treating people with PTSD.
So, and also I always tell, like, my clients in particular, like, if I don't know something, I will research to the max capacity. Like, if I feel a client needs EMDR, because that can be very helpful for PTSD, for trauma too, you know, like any of that. And I think that it would benefit them, I would guide them that way. Or if I think that someone else, if they feel they're presenting like they want somebody that relates to them, like, I will make sure that they, if they're not getting it from me, that I can refer them to someone that's, and that they're not alone. I think that's the baseline, is like, just because you may not vibe with me or vibed with another therapist doesn't mean that there's not someone out there that you would feel comfortable.
Yes. It's like at the end of the day, I just want you to get help. If it's not me, it's okay because I'm not for everybody and not every client's for me. We'll all be okay. We just want you to get help.
Yeah, and I like how you mentioned support groups too, which, again, those are not for everybody, but some people thrive with them, and it is nice when you have other veterans and you can kind of, like, relate through that, and you're like, okay. But then it's like you have to check in with yourself about those boundaries, and you can share. So I don't have a problem disclosing certain things, but I'm not going to disclose the first two, three, four sessions to a client. You know, you're just getting to know them. And but if it's like somebody that, you know, that I have, like, a, like, if we both went to Iraqi Freedom, you know, the operation,
Or, I
it's
mean, it's
like,
in your bio, right? So if somebody like, you know what? I want Rose because she knows exactly what I went through and she's a therapist. So maybe she could, just like people who come who pick me because I'm Asian and they could explain like dynamics without going into every single detail. So that's, so what? While you were talking, I was also thinking, what for people? Well, okay, I was thinking a few things. One, when you said support groups, I was thinking about those VA lodges, right? And I think that's what they're called, like where there's a hall and there's a bar, and usually it's like and I'm maybe stereotyping, but it's true, I think, men hang out there. I don't really see many women going in. Do you think that there should be more women, like, specific support for military? Are there, like, places like that to socialize, or?
I do think there is a place to be had for women. I do think the help in general for, like, the VA and stuff is difficult to come by, but it's especially difficult for women. And they've gotten better. They've come a long way. Like, they have stuff in Wilmington for, I don't even remember what the group, but it's, like, military sexual trauma. They have for women and men, I think, but mostly women go to that. But they have, like, little groups like that. But again, it's sometimes when it's the whole story perspective, right? Because we're treated, or at the time when I was in, that we were, like, these bad eggs, that we had to be transferred out. Even before we were a problem, that's the thing. And I think that's pretty common. Although, like I said, it's gotten better. I do think there should be a place for women, because there is that stigma of, oh, well, you weren't actually in combat, or you know, and it's like, well, you know, we still were military police officers.
Correct.
Some of the
were
women.
Were you holding a gun, walking back and forth, making sure, like, being ready to shoot
right.
if somebody escapes or something? Like, I think that's combat.
Yeah. right.
I mean, just not like
even being away from home in a red zone where mortars come in and everything.
I think the movies.
Yeah, no, I definitely think
the movies and so many movies about Vietnam, like, people are thinking like it's only combat. It's like guerrilla warfare or something like that.
Yeah.
Like
no,
not, especially not with AI technology and missiles. These days, right? Like, there's so many, and nuclear weapons. There's, like, now we're just setting off all these different, like, things on the radio radar. But
right. Winning.
So, what message, and I'm going to wind down the two questions. So, this second to last question for the people who are in the military, who are afraid to go get therapy because they don't want to be seen as a bad egg and shipped off, or why can't you just be tougher? Why can't you just suck it up and keep it to yourself? Don't complain, you know, all those things. What message would you want them to have?
Just keep searching, really, because we have so many, you know, of our brothers and sisters that are committing suicide or, you know, coping through other means. And at the end of the day, you know, we have to remember what we signed up to do. And if we're not taking care of ourselves, not getting the help, then it's kind of for what? Like, why did you do it? And, you know, questioning that, and, like, it supersedes the guilt and the shame that comes with. There's no reason to not talk to somebody. And
are there therapists there that they could find? Is there, like, a mental health component there that they're not going to get, like, penalized?
You know, then now we're setting off real alarms now. So I do think that could be improved upon, of course, because, you know, everything's documented and stuff. But, like, when you come, that's why we'll see a civilian person, because usually it's not as, you know, maybe
that's
traumatizing.
True.
Like, if you're right. So you're seeing someone that's not affiliated, but you're still getting coverage. Like, if, most of the time you can still, you have to do, like, a yearly or every few years at the VA with somebody that they approve. But 9 times out of 10, they'll let you see somebody that you choose, that you feel comfortable, that's in your area. So you're not having to drive 30 minutes to an hour to find somebody. Or now we have virtual stuff. So there's also that. There's no reason to not.
So would you say, I mean, we as clinicians, we know PTSD symptoms generally don't start until after, because during we actually don't want, if you're still in the trauma, we actually don't want to like open the floodgates, right? Because that's what's keep helping you keep yourself together and compartmentalizing, keeping you safe. So would you say like, is there help for people? Like, let's say if you just needed to be like, oh my gosh, I had a really bad day today. Do you use your peers mostly, or are there clinicians in like the army? Like, is that a job?
Yeah, no, they have LACs and LPCs and, all of the things. It's just finding one that you feel comfortable with. And sometimes we're so tired of fighting our inner battle that we don't want to fight the fight of finding someone that we connect with enough to. Sometimes I think it's helpful to find somebody that doesn't really have an attachment to it. But then maybe has like family that has experience or something like that. But again, it's like everyone's different. Everyone can, I don't know where I was going with that thing too, but like everyone has like that person that they connect with. And I think there's so many therapists and there are opportunities at the VA, but also the VA works with outside
No,
companies as
I
well.
mean like when you're at combat.
Oh, yes. So, well, that's a whole thing as well, because I think most people don't want to be. You have the people that want to be sent home
Yes.
for this, and then
I've
you
seen
have people.
MASH, so I know all about
Yeah.
that. No, I'm
And
kidding.
then people that don't want to be seen. I know there was like a couple of incidents at the combat hospital that people were struggling and went to see. And it's not that the. It's just very hard when you're in theater because, like you said, you don't want to unleash the floodgates because that could go either way. And we're armed, and sometimes it can lead to using that and you're not really seeing clearly,
Correct.
right? Or other means on yourself, other people. But they do have small units in theater, for that. Yeah.
Good.
Not always the best option, but it is.
A little band-aid until we get home.
And if it's bad enough, I mean they do send them back home. Sometimes it takes a while to be.
No, but do you know what I'm talking about in MASH with that? I know you're younger than me, but I mean, even I'm not as old as when MASH came out. But, so last question, self-care. We love this question. What do you do for self-care, especially after like maybe a week that was heavier than others? And then, being a mom, a wife, and all the things. What do? What helps you unwind?
I don't know. I mean, when I was younger, I used to like run until all the thoughts were away, or at least I was like tired enough. I like
Run
going
until the thoughts
outside.
are away, man.
Yeah. It's a long run
I would be
sometimes,
like
but
Forrest Gump because my thoughts
yeah,
would never go
yes.
away.
Now all my I'm older, my knees are a little more, messed up, but I love to walk my dogs. Sometimes it is like finding things that, again, I'm so far from it. Like I'd always love to like, we'll say, go to a shooting range or something like that. That's like an enjoyment piece of it that's not triggering. Can be triggering for some, but it's like reading a book, I won't watch the news. I know what triggers me and what does it. I mean, I'll read an article, but I won't watch the actual news because that's enticing, like the emotions, the over emotions.
It's
And
made
it's
to
reminding yourself.
entice, to like rage bait,
And
right?
I think self-care, you have to check in with yourself. Like what is going, what is my purpose of the self-care, right? Like, because there's different types too.
Correct.
You know, there's real rest and restoration.
Like a really good massage that you feel.
Yeah.
Like, were facials. You there when we talked about it? It's not a good massage unless you felt like you've been assaulted.
You know, yeah, no, was, for yeah. sure. Like, I love some yeah. deep pressure massage. Yeah. Or like warm, you know, I have like a warm, like a heating pad and okay. then just put on a huge blanket.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, just or take an Epsom salt bath or magnesium bath,
yes.
you know, that can help too. Okay. Or go away on a trip.
Like to like I just Charleston. Did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you for taking time out to talk to us. And now I'm all paranoid about tomorrow. I'm kidding. But truly, 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 I'm just saying thank you for being you and all that you've done. And I'm so glad you're part of Aurora. And you've already touched so many people here. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me.
Before we go, Aurora Healing Crew, take a deep breath like you're soaking in sunlight. Warm, steady, grounding. As you move through your day, check in with your gut. Notice how you feel around others. Your energy is precious. Protect it so you have the strength and light to do what really matters to you. Because life is hard, and we're getting through it together. Thank you for listening to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch. Visit our website at aurorasuncounseling.com to learn more. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Just search Aurora Sun Counseling. Got questions or topics you'd love to hear us cover? Email us at info@aurorasuncounseling.com or drop a comment. We'd love to hear from you.